And today's topic, I'm really going to be dropping some juicy bits here, y'all. So buckle up, because I'm going to be talking about some topics that impact essentially half of the Earth's population. The things discussed here, you probably haven't heard about in your high school health classes or just health class in general. And in all honesty, you probably won't find this information out unless you are the one doing the digging and the research, because it really just isn't common knowledge and it's just not talked about a whole lot. So in this episode, we are going to go there. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Fitness Lying Down podcast, where it is I, Megan the Trainer, registered dietitian, am doing a nutrition takeover. So yes, there is a little frog in the back of my throat, but we will be able to get through this podcast episode nonetheless. And today's topic, I'm really going to be dropping some juicy bits here, y'all. So buckle up, because I'm going to be talking about some topics that impact essentially half of the Earth's population, and that is menopause and hormones. The things discussed here, you probably haven't heard about in your high school health classes or just health class in general. And in all honesty, you probably won't find this information out unless you are the one doing the digging and the research, because it really just isn't common knowledge and it's just not talked about a whole lot. So in this episode, we are going to go there. I've done a lot of digging to help serve the clients that I see, and I am ready to kind of package up all of the things that I have acquired and that I have learned and present it in this lovely little episode all for you. That being said, tune in as well during this episode, because I have a free hormone guide in general that kind of summarizes this information along with some other graphics and other visuals, and you can get that for free, $0. And I'm going to tell you how you can get that, so stay tuned for more on that. So getting into some of the women's health things and just hormones in general, so some of the things that we're going to be going through, or some of the questions, I guess I should say, that we will be answering include, do you really know what happens during a menstrual cycle? Did you know that this cycle impacts training sessions and weight regulation? Did you know that estrogen is connected to more than just a reproduction? It's connected to heart health, bone density, even motivation. Yeah, right? Do you know how to help your body regulate your hormones so that way you can feel at your best? If you don't know the answer to any of these questions right now, you hopefully will by the end of this episode. So, again, for those of you who may be new here, my name is Megan. I am a registered dietitian, so I am a nutrition expert. So I am not a hormone expert. I'm not an endocrinologist by any means, but I have looked at the connections between our food choices, or whether they're good choices or bad choices, and how that is going to impact our health, especially when it comes to menopause and hormones. The majority of the clients that I see here at Fitness Lying Down are kind of in that perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause kind of season of life. So this is all stuff that I am well aware of, and I feel like I'm well informed of. I definitely take some passion into this, because I feel like the more I learn about myself and the more I learn about my body, I feel so much more empowered. So I hope that you get to feel empowered as well. So we're going to go through some hormone basics before we kind of get into some of the deeper things here. So some hormone basics, we've got a couple of hormones here, and these ones are mainly our stress hormones. So there's a whole plethora of hormones that circulate through our body that have all kinds of different functions. They're mainly just communicators. So estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, thyroid hormone, and cortisol are just a few that we're just going to mainly be kind of focusing on for the content of this episode. So estrogen, this is the predominant female hormone. So it's got a lot of roles in obviously our reproduction, but it also has some roles with our cardiovascular health, so our heart health, our lung health, our metabolism, our memory, maintenance of our lean tissue or like our muscle mass, our bone health, and then also our body temperature regulation. So kind of keep some of those things in the back of your mind, because we're going to hear about some ups and downs of estrogen later on, and you kind of need to know what that all is doing to all of these things that it's connected to. So that's estrogen. Progesterone. Progesterone is mainly the hormone that's used for pregnancy. It's really supportive of pregnancy. If you think of progesterone and progestation, pro-pregnancy. So it helps to regulate the uterine lining. It's needed for a healthy cycle and for healthy pregnancy. It stabilizes your mood, enhances sleep. And that was really just a nice calming and relaxing hormone. It's a really great one. And it also increases our metabolism. So woohoo, everybody's going to love progesterone, right? But again, as we kind of go through some different seasons in our life, estrogen and progesterone kind of bop all over the place. So we'll get more into that. Testosterone is predominantly a male hormone, but it still is important for females. And realistically, we all have these hormones, but they're just in different ratios and in different levels at different points in our life. But with testosterone, it's going to be responsible for growth and maintenance of our muscle tissue, important for motivation, libido, and energy levels. Thyroid hormones. So there's a few different kind of forms of this. You know, there's T4, T3 reverse and thyroid stimulating hormone, et cetera. But we're just talking broad spectrum, just thyroid hormone. So this is a hormone that really connects to every cell in our body. It's going to control our metabolism. It's going to control our heart rate, body temperature, digestion. Again, it's really going to reach everywhere. All of our cells have receptors for thyroid hormone. And then lastly, cortisol. So cortisol is our stress response hormone, and it is going to impact our blood sugar. It's going to impact your blood pressure, immune function, and especially anxiety. So all of these hormones are kind of made in different places. So our body can kind of make some of them in a few different spots, but mainly a lot of our reproductive organs are going to be the main hub for a lot of these things. Thyroid is obviously going to be coming from our thyroid gland, which sits kind of on your throat, kind of next to your, between kind of your windpipe and your esophagus. And then cortisol is going to be made from your adrenal glands. Now, this is important because we're going to circle back to this later. All right. So now from here, when we get into a reproductive cycle again, we're talking on average here because everybody's is a little different. But if we kind of guesstimate, if we cut corners where we're saying that an average cycle is going to last 4 weeks or 28 days, we can kind of split that cycle right down the middle. And so now in that guide that I mentioned earlier, I do have a chart to kind of help visualize this within that guide. So if you want something to better visualize it, again, stay tuned for how you can get your hands on that guide. So we can split our reproductive cycle in two different spots. So we've got follicular and we have luteal. So the follicular phase, this starts on day one of our cycle. So as soon as we start menstruating, as soon as there is blood. And this is going to carry through all the way until ovulation. And then we're going to switch gears and go into the luteal phase. So then luteal phase is ovulation until the next cycle begins. So we kind of, like I said, we've got two different sides of the cycle. So focusing back on the follicular. So this is the first half. During this phase, because of what hormones are doing, because of where they are up, down, and whatnot in relation to each other, we tend to be less reactive to stress, meaning that we can handle stress better. During this time, our body does not have to fight nearly as hard for those physiological stressors, those emotional stressors that are translating over cortisol, you know, kind of thing. So, but something else to note here too is that as we have a decrease in estrogen, which happens as we get closer to ovulation, so towards the end of this, usually somewhere in week two-ish, we're going to have a drop in estrogen, or we'll have decreased estrogen, which drops natural serotonin as well as digestive enzymes. So this is where sometimes we can feel more gas, more bloating. We can have trouble digesting food. We can be reaching to food more often for just some like emotional support. So there are some things that happen hormonally that sometimes, and I say we as women, because I definitely did this to myself as well. I am definitely a part of this group. Is sometimes we are quick to blame ourselves. We lack the motivation. We lack the willpower. We lack the discipline. We lack the whatever you want to call it. It's totally our fault. But in reality, there are these things going on from a physiologic standpoint that are not helping us in any way, shape, or form either. So that's some of the things that are happening in the follicular phase. Now switching gears to the luteal. So again, this is from ovulation until the start of the next cycle. So during this phase, we can kind of see a little bit of an increase in progesterone. And then towards the end, it's going to drop off right before we start our next cycle. Progesterone increases insulin resistance. which means that your body is not going to tolerate carbs nearly as well as it once did. Well, I shouldn't say as it once did, as it does in the beginning of your cycle. And also at this point here too, you might benefit from actually increasing your calorie consumption because of everything that's happening hormonally. Not a crazy increase by any means, but we can sometimes see some increases in our metabolism. So if you remember back when we were talking about kind of the differences between those hormones of estrogen and progesterone, so progesterone is going to increase your metabolism. So the second half of your cycle, when progesterone is getting a little higher, you might benefit from adding some more calories in because your metabolism is going up. This can also influence our body temperature. So you might notice an increase in your body temperature. You might also notice some stiffness or some lack of your usual mobility around time of ovulation, just because of, again, the things that are happening with our hormones. Now, ovulation, that's really the whole point of a cycle, is for an egg to be released, or ovulation. That's essentially what is happening here. So once an egg is released, you're really fertile for about 24 hours, which I think was something surprising for me to learn, or maybe something that I just didn't really fully understand. But you really only have about a 24-hour window to conceive. Of course, sperm can live a little bit longer, so sometimes that's where you can get about like 5-ish days of a fertile window. But that being said, anything outside of that phase is your chances of pregnancy drop dramatically. So in terms of if you don't want to use hormonal birth control, or if you are looking to be pregnant and to start your family, knowing where you are in your cycle is immensely important because that will dictate what you decide to do for your family planning things. So that is something that I definitely don't think I fully understood, and I hope that other people listening do understand that a little better. So all of that being said is, again, we can have some different moods, some different training impacts, some different cravings. Our weight can fluctuate depending on where we are in our cycle journey because of what's happening with our hormones. So when it comes to our training, there's some people who will advocate for cycling your activity and kind of matching it to where you are in your cycle. There's some mixed research on like how effective that is and if everybody should be doing it. I'm a bigger advocate of just tune into your body and see what feels best. We'll get a little bit more into what exactly that would look like, but just from a bird's eye view, in the follicular phase, you might have a little bit more boost in strength and endurance. And in the luteal phase, you might want to do a little bit more restoration things, more yoga, more inward focus, more mobility work. Like I said, with some of the changes in progesterone, sometimes we lose some of our mobility. So doing more stretching might be more beneficial during that time. As far as food cravings in the follicular phase, so again, we've got increased insulin sensitivity, so we can better tolerate carbs in that first half compared to the luteal, where we are not going to be nearly as sensitive to carbs. Again, that luteal phase, progesterone increases insulin resistance. So in that first half, we might be able to better tolerate carbs. So again, sometimes people demonize things and you get frustrated at yourself because you're like, oh, I have no willpower around bread, bagels, and whatever, pasta. But at the same time, if we think about what's happening from a hormonal standpoint, that can kind of put some things into perspective. So as far as our weight goes, sometimes there can be an increase about 3 to 5 days before our cycle with our weight, and then it's going to go back and we'll level back out a few days into our cycle. Again, this is all specifically from just hormonal things happening. You could change absolutely nothing. Don't worry about what you're eating. Don't worry about how you're moving. You keep everything the same. These things can still happen. So again, the big reason on why bringing some of that stuff up is to put that into perspective. So when it comes to our mood and our cycle, if we kind of break again our, well, again, in theory, if we had in a perfect world, if it was 4 weeks long, the first week, so while we are cycling, while we're menstruating, we're probably going to feel some decreased energy. We're going to move a little bit slower. We might be a little sleepier. Second week, we might have a little bit more energy. So it's in my mind, the chart that I'm envisioning is we start out kind of at the bottom at the beginning and we start working our way up. Week three is when we kind of have that ovulation hit. That's usually in that second half. And this is where we get max energy. We get a lot, big boost in our concentration. We're probably feeling more energetic. We're feeling more outgoing. And then in week four, it kind of starts to taper back off again. So then we just kind of undulate back down, and then we come right back up, and then back down, and then back up with the next cycle, and so on and so forth. So with all of this being said, again, like, think about what kind of stuff is going on during your month. And I know something that I have noticed is that usually when I get to be around, like when my cycle is happening, like my brain just does not function. I forget things, little things. And so I know that I need to be better about writing things down, sending myself email reminders, putting in calendar reminders and things like that. So instead of getting so frustrated at myself and beating myself up all the time, I'm like, you know what? This is all just because there's some hormonal things going on. Gives myself a little bit of grace. So that is where the biggest piece of advice that I usually give clients when it comes to this stuff is just simply awareness. If you know where you are, then you can see how your body is responding. So that way you can understand what you do need to do to really make the most impact. So as far as like some other things that we can do from supports, so that was kind of like the background side of things of, you know, what is it, the kind of the basics. But as far as some support things go, so again, awareness is support tip number one. Number two, the importance of nutrients and a nutrient-dense diet. We need to have enough of this stuff coming in from our food and good quality foods. So that way we have all of the things to make all of these hormones and all of the other things that need to happen in our body. There is a concept called seed cycling. And this is where you kind of rotate through different seeds depending on where you are in your cycle. There's not like a ton of evidence to this. I mean, there's some research about it. And I wouldn't say that it's a cure-all and it's going to completely balance all of your hormones if you have crazy wonky hormones, but this is something that we control. And if you look at the nutrition facts of some of these nuts, so in the follicular phase, it's a combination of pumpkin and flax seeds. And then in the luteal, it's sesame and sunflower. And if you look at the nutrition of these specific nuts, you can see a lot of zinc, a lot of minerals, a lot of those fat-soluble vitamins, just vitamins and minerals in general, coming in from both all of these nuts and seeds. And so do you have to go out and buy all of these snack mixes? No, but at the same time, like, feed yourself, nourish your body, nourish to flourish, right? Come on. And so again, that's kind of the biggest takeaway. And so then if you can understand where you are, you know what's happening with your hormones, you then know what you need to, you can be more empowered on what you need to do. So that's some of the basics of hormones and things. So that's all of those things kind of ebb and flow during a cycle. Now, of course, during pregnancy, our hormones are going to be shifted quite a bit. And typically once we are postpartum, both estrogen and progesterone pretty much tank to like menopause levels. And we'll kind of talk about what exactly that means. But this is where there's a big connection to some of the symptoms that some women experience right away in that postpartum phase. So like the postpartum depression, there's definitely a connection to that. You know, if I said that our hormones are plummeting, thinking back to progesterone, it's a calming and relaxing hormone. We're losing it. We're losing our calming and relaxing hormone. And of course, during this time, it's not helpful because we're running usually on little sleep or just such broken sleep. Stress is usually really high. Our adrenals are taxed to the max. Again, remember thinking that our adrenals are the ones responsible for cortisol, which is our stress response hormone. So there's a lot of things going on. So now to kind of switch gears as we move out of our reproductive phase and into the menopausal phase, there's some kind of ground, well, I'm not going to say ground rules, but there's some ground information that I want to reiterate here. So menopause is actually not the process. Menopause is an event, and it is when you have gone 12 months consecutively without a cycle. So if you've gone 11 months and then you cycle again, you have to start your countdown all over again. I know that is immensely frustrating. But anything before menopause is considered perimenopause or around menopause. We have that one day in time where we have been, in fact, 12 months without consecutively. And then anything after that is then postmenopausal. So what happens here is, again, our estrogen and our progesterone drop. So like I mentioned before with our postpartum phase is that we do have a decrease in these hormones. But now think back to the whole point of like when we talked about what some of these hormones do. So If we have a decrease in both of these, this now is going to increase our risk of cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis. It's going to reduce our metabolic rate. So all of these internal things, these physiologic things, are going to start happening just simply again because of the shifts that are happening with our hormones. So many times we beat ourselves up over it. And I feel like I'm repeating this over and over in this podcast, but this is like the biggest thing that I tell clients. Like, you can do all the right things, but some of your hormones will still be a little wonky. Depending on what all is exactly happening. So, some anatomy things. And this is something that kind of like blew my mind, and it usually blows most clients' minds as well here. So, with going into that menopause, that perimenopause, postmenopause, whatever you want to call it, season, the ovaries are the main powerhouse for estrogen. Just like the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, the ovaries are the powerhouse of estrogen. They're the main production site. Now, as we get into menopause, or again, perimenopause, whatever you want to call it, our ovaries are essentially turning off their estrogen production. We don't need to be reproducing anymore. So the ovaries, they're retiring, closing up shop. But we do still need some low-lying levels of estrogen in our body. So again, men have estrogen in their body too. So we do need a certain level. So if our ovaries are like our first string quarterback and they are not going to be making our estrogen, they need to pass it on to our second string quarterback, which is our adrenal glands. Now, remember when we talked about our adrenal glands, how they're responsible for our body's stress response? So if you have raging amounts of stress or have poor coping skills for your stress in your life, your adrenals are going to be already pretty taxed, and they're not going to want to take up the role of now making your body's level of estrogen when it's too busy trying to put out all the fires of the stresses that are going on in your life. So the third string quarterback to make estrogen is adipose tissue. Now, who knows what adipose tissue is? Now, of course, that's more of a rhetorical question since this is a podcast format, but adipose tissue is fat tissue. All right, let that sink in for just a hot second. Our ovaries are not making estrogen anymore. If our life is crazy, hectic, chaotic, and we are not managing our stress appropriately, then our body's going to lean onto fat tissue to make more estrogen because our fat tissue can make estrogen. So, therefore, you can do all the things right. And if you notice that you have been packing on a few more pounds around your belly and you're in this perimenopause phase, then I definitely encourage you to take a look at the at your life, at your stress levels, at what's happening from a nutritional standpoint. Because now, again, stress is not only just like work stress, family stress, life stress. This can also be inflammation stress. This could also be deficiencies, nutrition deficiency stress. This could be you're overtraining and you're not allowing your body time to recover. You're not sleeping well. So your body, again, it's having a tough time recovering. So again, if we want to push back the ball, if we want to hand it back up the system, again, our ovaries are not doing it, but we don't want our fat tissue doing it, then we need to be able to pass it back to our adrenals. Now, of course, in this season of life, for a lot of women, there is usually a lot of things going on. So, not only is your body going through all of this physiological shifts, but maybe this is the point where, I mean, I've heard people call it the Oreo generation, where maybe you're now having to take on more responsibility in caring for your parents. And now you're having to take on more responsibility and maybe caring for your grandparents. You're kind of like right in the smush. You've got people on both ends of your on both ends of your cookie here, of your cream, whether it's grandparents or it's just children in general. But usually around that time in life, maybe you're also becoming an empty nester. So not only is your body physiologically closing the door on, continuing on your family, but now your family is moving out and moving away. And sometimes that can be really hard. And sometimes we don't realize how much that is really influencing us until we actually sit down with it and we really examine it. So this is usually a breaking point for a lot of clients where we tend to bring out the box of Kleenex, and that's okay. I love holding space for that. I don't love when clients cry. Like, that's definitely not what I'm saying. But I like when clients feel comfortable enough to talk about some of these things because sometimes we don't always have the space to do that. So know that if this is something that you tend to struggle with, and if you are trying to find somebody who can help you with some of these things, know that if you come into my office, it is a judgment-free zone. So, okay. Oh, that was a lot of heavy stuff. Let's kind of just shake that off a little bit. Okay, so focusing back on again, progesterone in our anatomy, or estrogen in our anatomy, is that, again, our body is trying to find a new level of estrogen. It's trying to find that new baseline level of estrogen. And now the other tricky thing here too is that our GI system is one of the major exit pathways in our body. So if our body is trying to get rid of extra estrogen, it's going to do that through our GI system. I'm going to get into some more tips and things in a little bit here too. But one of the biggest things here is now supporting your body's detox pathways. And now when I say like detox pathways, of course, everybody's like, ooh, green sludge. You're like, oh, she's going to recommend I go on a detox diet and I drink this juice for 4 days and I cleanse and blah, blah, blah. That's not what I'm getting at all. I'm simply just saying we need to support your body's processes of getting things out efficiently. And the biggest area of opportunity that I have found for clients is, are you regular? Do you have consistent and regular bowel movements? Because again, that is an exit pathway. We need stuff to get out of your system. And the longer stuff sits in you, the higher the chances of it getting reabsorbed. And now, at the same time, I just feel like sometimes when I talk to clients about this, I'm like, oh, it's like I'm kicking you while you're down. All of these changes in hormones, again, so I just said we need to make sure that you're regular. All of these changes in hormones can influence and increase rates of constipation. So again, kicking you while you're down. Sorry, not sorry. Sorry, sorry. Oh, yeah, yeah. All of the joys of the double X chromosome, as I like to say to clients. But that being said, making sure that we have enough fiber coming in, making sure that we're drinking a lot of water, making sure that we're eating at a relatively regular basis so we have stuff to come through the system and to push it out and to push our food out. So there's a whole like slew of things when it comes to digestive health, but today we're just keeping it basic with more of just hormone things. So, and as far as like supporting our body's detoxification pathways, you don't need to go out and buy expensive supplements or do specific protocols. The biggest tip that I usually have for clients is, can you include more cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, those kinds of things? So that family of plants has some more phytonutrients in it that can just be supportive of what's called phase one detox, which is that kind of beginning phase. This is getting real nitty gritty into some anatomy and physiology stuff, so I'm going to try to not dig too deep of a hole here. But the biggest thing is there are going to be some nutrients in that veggie family that can be supportive of that. Again, you don't have to eat broccoli for every meal, but can you include a little bit more here, there, and yonder during your week? Can you look to see when are you having it? Could you have another meal where you have it as a side? Can you include it in your salads, et cetera? Little things like that. So cruciferous vegetables can sometimes help kind of push estrogen out, and then fiber can keep it in your GI system. So that way it can actually vacate your body and not get reabsorbed. So that is all that. So the other thing too is that estrogen is going to influence our body's ability to process carbohydrates. So I talked about way back again when we were explaining the differences between the two different hormones, is that estrogen and progesterone have impacts on our blood sugar regulation. And therefore, again, progesterone increases insulin resistance. And so when we have higher levels of estrogen, we are more insulin sensitive. But like I just said, now we're having decreases of estrogen. We're also having decreases of progesterone. But at the same time, estrogen is really kind of the queen bee. So I've got a graphic in my handout that, again, that you can get your hands on if you want it. I think it might be a benefit to you. But that being said, estrogen is kind of just like throwing a temper tantrum through perimenopause. Progesterone is kind of on a slow decline and then it just kind of tanks. But estrogen is kind of all over the place. And that's usually where some of these symptoms come into play, like night flashes, hot sweats, night flashes, hot flashes, night sweats. I feel like I make up words on my own sometimes. Bone loss, mood changes, bleeding changes, cognitive function, metabolic changes, memory loss, poor sleep, diabetes, and then sexual dysfunction as well. So there can be some changes in that whole realm of things. But again, the big thing is that we just want to help your body kind of find that new normal. So making sure that we're getting enough veggies coming in is going to be important for that. So some other kind of things to note when it comes to menopause shifts is kind of like what we talked about with adrenals, is we want to make sure that we are appropriately supporting our adrenals. So of course, the root cause approach, the best approach, the one that I would definitely recommend, is simply looking at your stress. Again, as I mentioned before, it's not just family stress or work stress or like that kind of side of things when we think about stress, but it could also be, again, inflammation, nutrition. It could also be overtraining, that kind of stuff. And how can we best support your body? So if you are experiencing any of some of these symptoms, then it might be kind of a sign that there's some adrenal dysregulation going on, where again, your adrenals are just taxed to the nines and are just really struggle bussing. So trouble falling asleep, you're feeling tired but wired, you have a lot of fatigue, blood sugar crashes, mood swings, abdominal adiposity, or again, we're having like some fat put around our midsection. Excuse me. Or we have some salt and or sugar cravings. So all of this stuff can be kind of connected back to our adrenals. So like I said, the best way to look at some of that is to look at your stress and how you are coping. There are some different nutrients, specifically like some minerals. So kind of thinking back to some of the seed cycling stuff, a lot of those minerals can be really supportive of our of our adrenals. And electrolytes are going to be really important too, like potassium, sodium, magnesium. There's some different things floating around on my social media about like adrenal cocktails or adrenal mocktails, I guess I should say. And there's different supplements like adaptogens that can be helpful. And so again, these are not things that are going to be the cure-all and that aren't going to completely, you know, fix everything. I always like to tell clients like sometimes some of these things can help just turn the volume down so that way you can actually implement some of your coping mechanisms. So it still comes down to your lifestyle changes. So kind of shed some light on some of those behavior and mindset kind of shifts. So I do want to just circle back to insulin resistance and carbs. Just wanted to talk a little bit about the adrenal stuff before I kind of get into the rabbit hole with carbs, that is. So the things that happen with carbohydrates is, again, with insulin resistance, it means that our body is just not responding as well as it once did to insulin. And our body needs to, or our cells need to respond to insulin so that way we can move glucose from outside of our blood and into the cells. Now we want it in there so that way we can use it for energy. And there are some negative consequences if we keep blood glucose high and if we have it just circulating out in our blood. It's not just for fun, it can be for damage. So some tips when it comes to some of this stuff is this is where doing. I always just kind of hesitate to like say the words, but like time restricted eating or intermittent fasting. Intermittent fasting, I usually just say, just sounds so like cliche and diet culture-y, but time restricted feeding is essentially kind of the same thing. But at the same time, we're just trying to just zip up and tighten up your eating windows. We're not making it super duper teeny tiny small. But this is where we are trying to just be respectful of a breakfast, a lunch, and a supper time. And we're not trying to eat like right before we go to bed, just because that's not going to help from a sleep standpoint. And it's not going to help from a digestion standpoint. And then it's also not going to help from a hormonal standpoint. So with carbohydrates, the big thing is we just want consistency throughout the day, and we want to give your body enough time to fully process them, which is why the time-restricted feeding can sometimes be helpful. So if you want to know more about that, please come see me or see some other dietitian, somebody that can kind of help explain and give you some context around it. It's not as simple as just simply skipping breakfast, and then eating the same, you know, foods that you usually do. That is like borderline anorexia tendencies. And we want to make sure that in your eating window that you're still getting enough nutrition coming in. Okay, so circling back to carbohydrates, we want consistent amounts in during the day, and we want to make sure that our carbs are not naked. So I feel like I talk ad nauseum about naked carbohydrates, and that is when carbs are all by themselves or they are naked. So some things that we can do to help put some clothes on our fictional naked carbohydrates is we can pair them with protein, fat, fiber, literally anything other than more carbohydrates, obviously. But what this is going to do is it's going to have a better impact on our blood sugar. So this is going to be something to tune into, whether you are in the menopause, perimenopause, whatever you want to call it phase, but also people who have either like prediabetes or are type 2 diabetic. All of this stuff is going to be applicable. So pairing with protein, pairing with fat, pairing with fiber, that is just going to help kind of dilute out some of the carbohydrates in your meal. So that way they're not just being sent right out into circulation right away. And then we don't have to have a big spike in our blood sugar, and then which leads then into a crash. And then we experience all of those uncomfy symptoms, which we definitely don't want to happen. Because then usually one of those uncomfy symptoms is usually increasing your sugar cravings. So then you go back for more carbohydrates, and then just the cycle just... it's just rinse, wash, repeat, and it is no bueno. So pair your carbs with something. So this could look like pairing fruit with a nut butter, pairing fruit with Greek yogurt, pairing crackers with cheese, or with like a little bit of beef jerky. Putting some peanut butter on your toast, putting an avocado on toast, having some eggs with your toast. If you're going to have some fruit, again, pair it with maybe some string cheese or a handful of mixed nuts, something like that. So that way, again, they're not just coming into the system completely naked. Something else that you can do is you can put clothes, I'm air quotes, but obviously you cannot see that. You can put some clothes on by doing some activity. And this is not to say that you need to do activity to burn off or like to earn what you eat, but activity is a way that we can still have an insulin-like effect on our cells without needing insulin present, meaning that if you are struggling with insulin sensitivity or things like that, where we can use activity to help get that glucose into your body cells without, you know, again, having to know if insulin is present or if that mechanism of action is successful. So going for a walk after a meal, timing your carbohydrates before you do a strength training session. That's honestly a really good pre-workout anyway. So then you have a lot of fuel coming in your system. So the other thing too, then, is when it comes to weight and this menopause phase, because like I just mentioned, you can do all the things right, but then because of the things that are happening with hormones, sometimes we're then putting on some central adiposity and nobody wants that. So this is where sometimes the old school mentality is eat less, move more. But I feel like we've all kind of come to accept, well, I shouldn't say we all have, because it's clearly a conversation that I keep having to have with a lot of clients. It's not always about counting the calories and just reducing your overall total calories. There's a layer of that. We do need to be mindful of our calories, but we also need to be mindful of the quality of those calories. Like I mentioned, we want to make sure that we're getting enough nutrients coming in, that we're getting enough nutrition from our food. So we want to choose some nutrient-dense foods. And so in doing so, if we can get enough fuel coming in your body and if we can be efficient with it, that can be one thing that we have control over that can be supportive of a healthy weight. The next thing that we can do is we can move our body. Again, not to say that you have to move your body and punish yourself for overeating, but moving your body, like I said, is going to help from a blood sugar standpoint, which can help from an appetite regulation standpoint, and so on and so forth. But if we can support our muscle and our bone health specifically in the season of life. So remember back, estrogen and progesterone, how they all kind of connect to a bunch of different things. And one of those things is our lean mass. Okay, so our muscle mass and our bone tissue. So if you are strength training and if you are lifting heavy, this is important. It's not, you're not just showing up to the gym and picking up the pink, you know, 2.5 pound dumbbells. Like, we need you to lift heavy. Think about how heavy your purse is. Like, let's be real, okay? How like functional fit you already are. So let's translate that to when you come into the gym. So if we can support our muscles and if we can boost our muscle mass, that's going to increase our metabolism. Muscle is very metabolically active. So if you want to boost your metabolism, skip all the stupid ads for the supplements that you see on social media. Lift heavy stuff. That's going to be helpful for your hormones. That's going to be helpful from a weight management standpoint. It's going to be helpful just on your health and your goals, period, end of story. All right. So those are some things, again, from a weight management standpoint and a muscle building standpoint. Now, if we are strength training, as we are tugging and as we are flexing and contracting our muscles, that's pulling on our bones. And we need a stimulus in our body in order to lay down more bone tissue. You can drink all the milk you want. You can take all the calcium supplements you want. But if you don't have a stimulus in your body, then your body's just gonna be like, okay, we've had enough. We're just gonna pee out the rest. And now the thing is that if we don't have the stimulus, the body's not gonna hold on to anything. All right. Like that's what that whole meant when we're just gonna pee it out. So if we have that stimulus, AKA strength training, now our body knows what to do with those things and to lay down more bone tissue and to reinforce the current and existing bone tissue. So strength training is going to be immensely, immensely helpful. Some general things when it comes to nutrition is we want as much variety and we want as much color as possible. So all of the color, the things that give food their pigments, those color compounds, those are really, really great phytonutrients. Some of them have anti-inflammatory effects in our body. Some of them can be antioxidation and stuff like that, or antioxidants. I don't know why I just said antioxidation. Antioxidants. So all of these things are going to be really helpful in our body. So we're looking for color. All right. So again, remember the big takeaways here from a food standpoint, we want to make sure that we are pairing our carbs with something. We're putting some clothes on them. We're getting some protein to help support our muscle mass. We have a stimulus for all of that calcium that we're eating because we want good, strong bones. And then we have a lot of variety and a lot of color, deep, dark, rich color coming in from our foods. All of these things kind of included together is going to give you the best chances at supporting your hormones during the menopause, perimenopause, whatever you want to call it, season. Now, of course, there's some asterisks. And as I always like to say, there's some zebras. You know, when we hear hoofbeats, let's assume horses and not zebras right away. So there's, of course, some zebra cases. And if you are doing all of these things right, and again, it's just not working, definitely come see somebody. Come see me. Come see another dietitian. I'll have some resources in the show notes of other people that I like to follow, other podcasts that I like to listen to that talk about a lot of these things that I learned a lot from, and I share these often with clients. So yes. Okay. Last and certainly not least, how to get your hands on the guide. All right, so that's pretty much all the information that I'm going to share with you today. And a lot of the things that I talk about, I kind of mimic in this guide and have just, again, some visuals. So they definitely go hand in hand. They kind of run tandem with each other. So how to get your hands on the guide? Go ahead and share this episode with somebody. Because if you learned something and if you had something that was a big takeaway for you, then I think somebody else probably needs to hear it too. I know for me, as I was learning about this, I just felt like my brain was exploding. And I was like, why am I 25 years old and I'm just now understanding what is truly happening in a menstrual cycle? Why am I such a number of years old and I'm just now realizing that that is why estrogen does all of these things and, you know, kind of connecting all of these dots. And then when I talk to clients about it, they're like, nobody told me this. Like, I had no idea all of this stuff was happening. So do somebody else a favor, pay it forward. This is a free resource where you can help educate and empower, especially empower. I felt so empowered as soon as I learned all of this stuff. So share this episode with somebody. So whether this means tagging yourself or tagging myself on social media, tagging your friends, if you comment on the little reel that we post in promoting this episode, if you send out this link to this podcast episode to your friends, you can CC me in an email or take a screenshot or just send me an email too. And I, you know, honestly, I'm really happy just to get this guide into whoever thinks it would be the most helpful. But at the same time, I want to make sure that I'm reaching the right audience for it. So you can help me do that. So again, share it with your friends, listen to it, and give a rating or like a one sentence review. You don't even need to go into like the podcast platform. Of course, if you do, like that would be super duper great and a free way that you can support us. So definitely share this episode. If I see that, if you tag me, if you tag FLD with something relating to this episode, that is how I will send that email right away. Well, I'll send you a message so that way I can send you the email right away. So that's how you can get your hands on the hormone guide. So, that was a lot of stuff. In short, I hope you learned something new today, and I hope you feel empowered when it comes to supporting your hormones, and I hope you understand your body a little bit better or are able to help somebody else understand their body. Even if you didn't learn anything new, I hope this simply validated some of the stuff that you already did know and to encourage you to keep doing it. So now that you know better, let's go out and do better so we can all be better.